You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
David Rode covered Iraq and Afghanistan for nearly 10 years. He won the Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on Srebrenica massacre in 1995 and shared the prize for New York Times coverage in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And as you may remember, for 7 months in 2008 and 2009, Taliban militants held him captive in Pakistan. More recently, Mr. Rode has been covering John Kerry since he succeeded Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. He examines what and how Mr. Kerry has been doing in an essay called How John Kerry Could End Up Outdoing Hillary Clinton. It's in the December issue of The Atlantic. And I'm pleased that it brings David Rode, who is now with Reuters, back to our show. Hi.
Thanks so much for having me here.
The biggest foreign policy news in recent weeks has been the interim agreement to freeze Iran's nuclear program. How big a role did John Kerry play in working out that deal?
I think he played a fairly big role. It wasn't as big as his role in restarting the Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations. One of the themes I saw in the story is very tight Obama White House control of Iran policy and Syria policy. So he deserves credit. He worked tirelessly for this Iran deal, but this was very tightly controlled by the White House.
Well, did Hillary Clinton indicate that she might have tried something similar if the Iranian election had turned out the way that it did?
Yes, and I remember talking to her aides for this story and trying to compare the Clinton versus Kerry tenure. And they pointed out that there actually was an effort by Hillary Clinton at a summit meeting in the Gulf to actually walk up to and shake hands with Iran's foreign minister in the middle of her 4 years in office. And the Iranian foreign minister at that time refused to do it. This was under President Ahmadinejad, and the Iranians weren't interested in talking then.
Benjamin Netanyahu has been strongly critical of the agreement. Relations between Netanyahu and President Obama have been tense in the past. How are they now? Are they worse than ever?
It's hard to know. I think definitely it's a frosty relationship between Obama himself and Netanyahu. One of the things Kerry brings to the job and sort of touts is his personal relationships. He's known Bibi Netanyahu for 30 years since Bibi was studying in the U.S. And, you know, that said, before Kerry flew off to Geneva for one of these meetings with the Iranians, he and Netanyahu stood at a press conference, and Netanyahu publicly embarrassed Kerry, saying this is a fool's errand, this is a disastrous deal. They didn't break, there wasn't a breakthrough that weekend, but it did happen, recently. And again, very publicly, Netanyahu said this was a historic mistake. So the relationship, has not really helped in that sense.
Some members of Congress have questioned the deal because they agree with Netanyahu.
Well, they don't trust Iran. And frankly, given the track record of hiding the nuclear program for, most of the last decade, Iran shouldn't be trusted. I think the White House and Kerry are thinking that Rouhani, the new president, is a real moderate and that he has his own politics to deal with. And this is an opportunity to bolster Rouhani and maybe marginalize the hardliners inside Iran.
And he keeps on saying this is just a first step.
It is. And I find, to me, the Iran agreement, which is essentially a freeze in Iran's nuclear program and an agreement to have now 6 months of negotiations on a final settlement, to me, it's very similar to the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks being restarted. That essentially was an agreement for 9 months of talks. Neither situation is some kind of landmark breakthrough.
Haven't U.S. intelligence people estimated that Iran is not aiming to build a nuclear weapon?
They have, but I think there's concern now that there's so many centrifuges in Iran. There's at least, I think it's 200 pounds of an uranium that's been enriched to 20%, that Iran is potentially weeks or maybe months away from nuclear breakout, that if they wanted to construct a bomb, they could do so in a very short time period.
Do you think that Bibi Netanyahu would be willing to unilaterally attack Iran?
He could, but the interesting thing about the military situation is Israel actually needs American assistance. There's refueling that Israeli jets would need, and there's actually American bombs, these bunker busters that would be needed to really, to really impact the Iranian nuclear program.
Well, since there is this tension now between Israel and the United States, and since Kerry's big initiative was some kind of a peace deal between the Palestinians and Israel, does this make it more difficult, or is it just, looking at history, the last guy to actually pull off any kind of a deal between Israel and one of its neighbors was Jimmy Carter?
yeah, there's long odds here. You know, let's be honest. And another analyst pointed out that the Iran situation makes it less likely that there'll be an Israeli-Palestinian deal, that if Netanyahu sort of accepts what he considers to be a bad deal with Iran, he's much less likely to compromise with the Palestinians.
What's the mood of the State Department over this deal? And has the mood at State, the staff, changed since John Kerry replaced Hillary Clinton?
I think they're happy that Kerry is sort of, you know, achieving these breakthroughs and that he's a very visible and sort of aggressive Secretary of State. But there is a real sense in the institution that it's being marginalized by the White House. It doesn't have the resources it needs. And after the attack in Benghazi, there's a real fear among American diplomats that they will not be allowed to go out and do their jobs. Diplomats told me, we are going to lose diplomats. We're going to have people die. We have to get out and take risks, or we're going to fail in terms of our foreign policy.
So is John Kerry on a tighter leash than Hillary Clinton was? Or was she also held rather tight leash?
They're both on a very tight leash by this White House. I think Kerry starts with an advantage, which is that there was some suspicion between the staff from Hillary Clinton's campaign and from Barack Obama's campaign. I do think that Hillary Clinton developed a very strong relationship with President Obama and got through that after about a year or so. Kerry doesn't have any of that baggage, so he's able to run with this Middle East initiative that the White House has given him.
Just a few days ago, Kerry described Hillary Clinton as one of the country's remarkable secretaries of state. Was he doing anything more than just being polite or political there? How do you think historians will rate Clinton's job as Secretary of State?
I think Clinton did a better job of actually building up the institution. There's two jobs for every Secretary of State. One is to manage this huge workforce of 50,000 Americans and foreigners that are, you know, in over 200 locations worldwide, and the other is to advise the president and to do that kind of shuttle diplomacy abroad. The most popular Secretary of State in the State Department, and diplomats are generally seen as liberals, is actually Colin Powell. He used his military background to sort of really build up training and morale and talk to people in the building and really delegate authority downward. Hillary Clinton did that. John Kerry is much more in the mold of sort of James Baker, who is much more into shuttle diplomacy and not managing the building. So morale is actually lower under Kerry than under Clinton.
You quote someone who knew Kerry as an undergrad at Yale, said even as a junior or senior, he was a pompous blowhard. Has that perception of him changed at all?
I think he's slowly changing it with these sort of Herculean, some say quixotic efforts in the Middle East. But he is a polarizing figure. A term that came up in a lot of interviews when talking about Kerry was gas bag. But he told me himself that he's learned from his mistakes. I think he's changed. And he said, I've become a more effective public person after learning from my past failures.
Of course, he was not Obama's first choice.
Yeah, Susan Rice was the leading choice, and then the Benghazi scandal sort of derailed her.
Do you have a sense of how Hillary Clinton was perceived abroad and how Kerry is being seen?
I think Hillary Clinton was more of a sort of political rock star. She brought a new form of diplomacy, lots more town hall meetings, lots more online activity, and she connected really well with women and development issues and was really excellent in terms of rehabilitating, I think, the U.S.'s image abroad. Kerry is much more a behind-closed-door Secretary of State who's, again, doing this very this shuttle diplomacy that does not involve, you know, engaging with average people in other countries.
David Rhodes' article in The Atlantic is called How John Kerry Could End Up Outdoing Hillary Clinton. Well, that suggests that despite what we've been saying so far, you see him as perhaps being more effective in the end.
Well, John Kerry has something that's very unique in Washington, and essentially that's nothing to lose politically. His aides told me that he was sort of liberated in a way when he lost to George W. Bush in the 2004 presidential election, and he's sort of given up his dream of becoming president. And in a way, he's more comfortable in his own skin. He can speak fluent French, which he does. He can obsess about foreign policy, which is his true nature, instead of raising money all the time and worrying about how things look politically.
And you note that many saw Clinton as too cautious, and I'm wondering whether that was largely because she was anticipating a run for the White House in 2016, something you say Kerry is not interested in doing.
I think that was a factor in her decision to sort of she is not engaged intensively in the Middle East like Kerry has. To be fair, they're very different people. Hillary Clinton is very prudent. She was famous for this voluminous amount of reading she would do at the State Department. She would read all of the staff memos she was given, and she's just
the one on Benghazi.
She was – good question. Except – and then Kerry apparently doesn't read staff memos. He's much more of a high-risk, high-reward Secretary of State. So they're very different people. But I do think a potential presidential run did impact her.
Has Kerry suggested that he has any ambitions after he leaves the White House?
No.
I mean,
the
State Department?
He swears he has no ambitions, that this is his last great hurrah. I think he realizes that. He loves this job. One of his aides told me that he'd have to be dragged out of the office of Secretary of State with his fingernails scraping the floor. He really, you know, wants to make a difference, and it's impressive what he's trying to do.
Although there are people who see him as being almost reckless. Is Obama on the more cautious Clinton side, or the more Kerry, let's take a lot of chances side in approaching foreign policy?
There's an interesting sort of divide, and one of the things about John Kerry is that before he went to Vietnam, he grew up worshiping John F. Kennedy, and he saw America as this beacon in the world that could do good things. He still has that idealistic side of him. He was tempered by Vietnam. He's very, leery of American military intervention. And so he thinks the U.S. can be a force for good in the Middle East. I think younger people that weren't as influenced by Kennedy, maybe Obama in that sense, you know, want to see us step back. They don't think we're a beacon in the world. They think we need to be more humble and actually do less.
But Kerry's been inconsistent. He voted to authorize President Bush's use of force in Iraq, and then he opposed the war, as he had opposed the war in Vietnam after he'd gone to Vietnam.
Yes, and on Syria policy, when he was, you know, he was the point man for sort of arguing for these strikes against the Assad regime after the chemical weapons attacks in Damascus. It was Rand Paul who sort of accused him of being hypocritical on Syria, because John Kerry in 2009 met with Bashar al-Assad and said we could negotiate with him. And then he's declaring him Hitler after these sarin gas attacks.
Well, did Rand Paul point out that Reagan and Bush's father and Bush as well had Bush's father anyway, but Reagan especially had good relations with Saddam Hussein for a while?
Yes, and one of the core things about Kerry is he will talk to anyone for endless amounts of time. One of the strange anecdotes, the first trip I went on him with, he arrived in Moscow on his first trip as Secretary of State and had a scheduled meeting with President Vladimir Putin. Putin kept Kerry waiting for 3 hours. He ended up, Kerry, sort of walking around Red Square, pointing at buildings, asking questions about, you know, local architecture. And it was really this humiliating thing, but it didn't faze Kerry at all. And he later on, you know, said to me, you know, people are dying in Syria. I'm going to wait 3 hours for an opportunity to maybe engage in some diplomacy that could save lives in Syria.
Well, are we doing all that well with Russia these days?
We're not. And this is one of the – so the criticism of Kerry is that he is overly ambitious and that he, you know, doesn't understand that if the U.S. isn't willing to go to war in Syria, it doesn't have more leverage than Putin and Russia, which is backing Assad with weapons and lots of political support. So that's the criticism, is that essentially Kerry is dated, that he's running around with a Kennedy-like belief in American influence and power in the Middle East that just doesn't exist anymore.
And then we had that situation where House Speaker Boehner said he was insulted when Vladimir Putin criticized the notion of American exceptionalism. Barack Obama seemed to criticize the idea of American exceptionalism in 2007 and then seemed to endorse it this past September. Where does Kerry stand on is American exceptionalism one of the really important points of debate in Washington these days?
I would say no. I think we've got some enormous problems abroad in terms of the Middle East, just, you know, heading towards cataclysm, it seems at times, and much bigger problems at home. So I don't think it's a major issue. I do think a key problem with Obama's foreign policy and his response to the Arab Spring has been consistency. He sort of was slow to back protesters in Egypt and then did back them when there was later a military coup, you know, overthrowing the elected president in Egypt this summer. The White House said very little and was very slow to even cut back some of the aid. So there's a real inconsistency about the Arab Spring, and the White House doesn't seem to know how exactly it wants to respond.
Well, partly because we're afraid that if we help one side, we may very well be experiencing the same sort of thing we experienced in Afghanistan, where there was a blowback.
That is the
real
fear.
And in Syria, that looks like something that we really should be serious about.
Yeah, Kerry privately had argued that the U.S. should be arming the Syrian rebels at the very beginning of the uprising against Assad. Hillary Clinton supported that. So did Leon Panetta and David Petraeus, you know, the head of the Pentagon and the CIA. But President Obama rejected that proposal in the summer of 2012 in the middle of a very heated reelection campaign. Who knows what would have happened? I think everyone agrees now that jihadists have essentially taken over the Syrian opposition. But it's just the level of bloodshed there is just extraordinary. I think the death toll is now over 125,000. And again, Kerry believes in engagement. He's trying to get the Gulf states to stop funding jihadist groups that are there, or at least private citizens in the Gulf states. Kerry, you know, for better or worse, and again, maybe it's about his ego, maybe he's exaggerating what he can achieve, he's always thinking of ways to try to engage. And let's, you know, okay, if we can't arm the rebels, let's try to cut off the flow of money to jihadists.
My guest is David Rohde, R-O-H-D-E. His article, How John Kerry Could End Up Outdoing Hillary Clinton, is in the December issue of The Atlantic. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with David Rohde, whose latest work is an article in The Atlantic called How John Kerry Could End Up Outdoing Hillary Clinton. Now, this is a joint project from The Atlantic and Reuters, where you work.
Yes, it's on the Reuters website, Reuters.com as well, and in the January issue, sorry, the December issue of The Atlantic, and on The Atlantic website also.
Beyond Iran, Syria, and Israeli-Palestinian peace, what's the Obama administration hoping to accomplish in foreign policy in the next 3 years?
Well, right now, Vice President Biden is in China trying to re-implement the pivot to Asia. This was an idea that actually Hillary Clinton proposed originally in an article that she wrote, and the administration keeps getting drawn back into the Middle East. And you know, they might be right about the long-term strategy in Asia, but I don't think, and Kerry does not think, the U.S. can ignore the Middle East.
Well, the administration has made some clumsy foreign policy mistakes, especially in the early days when Hillary Clinton talked about the reset for the Russians. The administration gave DVDs of American movies to the British government. And more recently, we have the NSA's activities angering many of our allies.
Yeah, this, again, I think this consistency theme with the administration, you know, again, do they support, you know, these democratic uprisings in the Middle East, or do they want sort of status quo with sort of generals and autocrats running the region? You know, is Obama transparent? Is he going to stop NSA surveillance, or does he support that? And, you know, the administration can't have it both ways. And that's, there's frustration in the public in the Middle East and frustration in the U.S. public as well.
And it's angering people in other countries as well. There was the Canadian surveillance during the G8 and G20 summits. We've heard about Australia. Was it New Zealand also doing something?
Yes, there's some term for the five basically English language countries that share intelligence with each other. And yes, New Zealand was heavily engaged in surveillance as well.
Has Kerry taken a stand on NSA surveillance?
He has not. I mean, he's very careful to – I tried to ask him if he got frustrated with White House control of certain aspects of foreign policy. He is incredibly supportive of President Obama, as you know, everyone in the administration is, and also of Hillary Clinton. But I would, again, I think that's the White House. This is a President Obama that talked about Cayman promisey transparency. The U.S. continues to carry out covert drone strikes around the world without explaining them. And the NSA scandal is just another example of that embrace of secrecy.
Well, Obama and Kerry have a relationship that goes back a while. Kerry gave Obama his big break by inviting him to give a speech at the 2004 Democratic National Convention.
Yeah, a lot of people don't, you know, forget that, but Obama at that point was a little-known state senator, and he was the keynote speaker when Kerry was sort of crowned the nominee. But the real period that I heard when they came together was that when Kerry was asked to play another sort of tall Massachusetts politician with good hair, that would be Mitt Romney. During the 2012 campaign, during debate prep, John Kerry played Mitt Romney. These were very intense sessions for the three presidential debate. Each one lasted several days. And apparently Kerry was so good at impersonating Romney that he really got under Obama's skin, and the two men really bonded during that process.
So Obama learned more about where John Kerry was at.
Well, they're similar, too, in that they tend to be private people. They can work a room, but they don't really seem to enjoy it. One of the aides said that both men would rather be in the Situation Room than sort of out At a fundraiser, but that, frankly, that distance, that stiffness can come across as arrogance. You know, people complain that President Obama is cold and that Kerry is sort of haughty and distant.
Talks to end Syria's civil war should start in January. Is there a reason why they aren't being started even sooner?
Because essentially Bashar al-Assad is winning the conflict. Iran and Russia have successfully backed the Syrian government. And of all the three initiatives, Kerry's, you know, big three initiatives would be the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, the Iran nuclear agreement, and Syria. Of the three, Syria is the least likely to succeed. Essentially, U.S. policy in Syria in terms of influence in the region is failing. If it's keeping the U.S. out of another conflict, it's succeeding.
At the start, it looked like Assad had a losing hand, and now it looks like he might very well be able to wait this thing out.
Moderate members of the Syrian opposition, some of whom I'd met in refugee camps in Turkey and Jordan, are really frustrated. They felt that it was a moderate movement when it started out, and there was no serious backing from the United States and Europe, and then jihadists came in and filled the vacuum. And one interesting thing is that the administration essentially tried to defer to its allies, that Turkey and Qatar and Saudi Arabia are going to take care of this problem in Syria. A disaster. There's debates, but whether it's rich Saudis or the Saudi government, they armed jihadists and have created a disaster among the rebellion in Syria.
Well, we mentioned that Netanyahu is upset by the tentative agreement with Iran, but so are some of our Arab allies, like Saudi Arabia.
Yes, and this is back to this sort of historic moment in the Middle East, and how is the administration going to respond? The Saudis wanted us to support the coup in Egypt. The Saudis want us to support the status quo. They don't think that the region is ready for sort of representative democracy, and the administration has seemed to go back and forth on this question all the time. The perfect example being we cut about half of the over $1 billion we give in military aid to Egypt. And I think that's seen as weak in the region. But yes, the Israelis and the Saudis are very frustrated and feel that we should be supporting crackdowns on protests.
Well, how much of that is a lack of policy and how much of that is also a response to domestic politics?
There's a tremendous, that's absolutely a fair point. No one in this country is interested in, major U.S. engagements in the Middle East, even diplomatic engagements. And what's interesting about Kerry is he's trying to show what diplomacy can do. I think we've had a tendency in the past to think when we've got a challenge in the Middle East, the way we're going to respond to it is militarily. Iraq showed what a disaster that is. I think there's a lot more diplomacy we can do, economic development. There is an information revolution in the Middle East. The protests in Taksim Square in Turkey and Istanbul against Prime Minister Erdogan. There are young urban, Egyptians, Turks, Iraqis that want to be part of the global economy, that want global norms. And you see that even with the reaction in Afghanistan in support of a long-term agreement for U.S. troops to stay. And I think that's something the U.S. could be more effective in working with those groups.
And the United States has pretty much said nothing about what's going on with Ukraine.
No, they haven't. And this is an optimistic thing, and many listeners will question, my belief in all this. But, people call it different things, globalization, connectivity. It's happening. This is a young generation of Ukrainians. I was just speaking to an expert about it this morning. I'm writing a column on it today that wants to be part of Europe.
I'm glad I brought it up.
Well, they want transparency, and they see the European Union norms that would be part of this agreement that would hopefully be signed with the Ukrainian government as a way to reduce corruption. And there's a generational divide in the Ukraine, and I think even in the Middle East, where people, they don't want to be American puppets. They don't want American soldiers invading their country, but they also in the Middle East don't want to be ruled by jihadists or, frankly, old Saudi monarchs. One of the criticisms of Obama was that when Saudi Arabia sent troops in and backed the crushing of protests in Bahrain, we support the protesters in Tahrir Square, but then we look the other way when it's our allies in the Gulf, the Saudis. And that's back to this consistency issue I mentioned earlier.
My guest is David Rode. His article, How John Kerry Could End Up Outdoing Hillary Clinton, a joint effort of Reuters and The Atlantic, available Reuters online and in the December issue of The Atlantic magazine. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. How does Kerry approach foreign policy issues that get less attention or where major successes seem less likely, like climate change?
Well, he talks about climate change, but to be blunt, he doesn't. He's focused almost entirely on the Middle East. And there's criticism inside the State Department that he's not paying attention to other issues, that he's sort of a – he's described as sort of a one-man band that has – and he has a sort of form of diplomatic attention deficit disorder where he'll shift from topic to topic, and he's not really consistent and strategic in dealing with issues that aren't on the front burner.
Well, right now, foreign policy is not on the minds of most Americans. We have gone through a serious economic crisis, the subprime mortgage crisis. Iraq also has faded as a major crisis, but we have these problems with the online health insurance exchange, and that's been getting a lot of attention. And Republicans continue to talk about Benghazi. Texas Senator John Cornyn said that the Obama team announced the Iran deal to distract attention from Obamacare, and he continues along with some other members of his party to press the issue on Benghazi. So these are really domestic issues, aren't they?
Yeah, there is a, you know, it's a real sort of isolationist period in the United States, which is understandable. I mean, we spent over $1 trillion and lost thousands of lives in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I think the U.S. should pull back in some ways. What Kerry argues is that the world economy depends on Middle Eastern oil. Yes, the United States is becoming more energy independent, but China's economy and Europe's economy needs a steady flow of oil from the Middle East. He feels that if he can get a breakthrough in one of these three areas, the Israeli-Palestinian agreement, an Iran nuclear deal, or Syria, it could stabilize the region. And then, and I agree with him on this, the big issue in the Middle East is a demographic bubble. 60% of the population in the Middle East is under the age of 30. There has to be large increases in economic growth in the Middle East, or there's going to be unrest in the future. I don't care who is running the region, whether it's regents, you know, or the Muslim Brotherhood. There, and so Kerry's goal is to get some stability through diplomacy and then try to start economic growth in the region.
Why do you think Benghazi has continued to have such resonance? First of all, did it undermine Hillary Clinton's effectiveness?
I think it definitely did. It was a real blow to her tenure.
And then it hurt Susan Rice.
It did hurt Susan Rice. And I think the issue is more what happened after the attack in Benghazi. You know, I think the administration did spin it in the first few days, trying to sort of play down the significance of the attack and say it was this random attack. But in terms of the defense of the compound itself, administration officials don't say this, but the annex was a large CIA base, and I think there was an understanding the CIA would protect the annex if there was an attack. But beyond that, back to this resource issue and having a fully, you know, funded dynamic State Department, just what happened in Libya was that after the new government toppled Gaddafi, they barred the United States from using private security guards to protect its diplomatic compounds. They had seen the shootings by Blackwater and other private contractors in Iraq. So the Benghazi compound did not have foreign security guards because we couldn't bring in firms like Blackwater. And I've talked to guards who were posted there. There were so few staff security officials in the State Department that they were only able to have three or four people there. And it was essentially mid-level bureaucrats. There's no evidence that Hillary Clinton herself turned down these requests. But there were these three or four agents at a time in Benghazi asking for more people, asking for more money, and mid-level bureaucrats who didn't have enough funding hoarding resources saying, no, 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 we've got 20 posts that are in danger. And so there was a problem in Benghazi with security, but it reflected this sort of not very thorough or effective State Department management.
And now John Kerry has inherited that problem.
And he has not really addressed it very well. There were four State Department officials put on leave by Hillary Clinton after her review. John Kerry put all four of those people back into their positions. He's promised to increase funding for security, but again, it's the kind of building management issue that he hasn't focused on yet. He says he's going to, but as far as I'm hearing, he hasn't yet.
You're right that Kerry had few close friends in the Senate, even though he'd served there for almost 30 years. But when he was confirmed, only three senators opposed him: Ted Cruz, John Cornyn, and James Imhoff, three of the most conservative members of Congress. Since he was one of the Senate's own, was that just token opposition?
Well, I think he has not delivered in terms of bringing the Senate along with him or the Hill along with him. If you think back to his testimony before Congress, before the potential strikes in Syria by the U.S., he didn't really sway public or congressional opinion. And look at this Iran deal. There's very strong opposition to the Iran deal from two Democrats, Chuck Schumer of New York and Robert Menendez of New Jersey, who are very powerful Democrats that the administration would usually have on its side. So Kerry has not delivered Congress in the way some people thought he might as Secretary of State.
Well, when so much of U.S. policy now seems to be aimed at war, Syria, Afghanistan, drone programs, possible cyber warfare, how much of a role can the State Department actually play?
I think it can play a large role. And one of the most interesting things was talking to Ryan Crocker. This actually isn't in the piece, but he talks about the need for the U.S. to be out on the ground in these countries, really doing a tough look at what developments in these countries really matter. And then as a second step, looking at where the U.S. can maybe shape an outcome. And then in very few places, in very few cases, trying to shape that outcome through diplomacy, economic stuff. There's a huge desire among young people in the Arab world to work for American tech companies, back to this economic growth idea. But diplomats say if you can be on the ground and react early, you're going to avoid places like Syria where it's out of control and it's almost too late to do anything.
At his confirmation hearing, Kerry said foreign policy is economic policy. So
I completely agree. Hillary Clinton coined a phrase called economic statecraft, which most Americans never hear of. The idea is that the State Department should also be promoting American exports. In terms of the broader Islamic world, a private airline in Indonesia, the largest Muslim country in the world, placed an order last year for over $20 billion, I think it was actually nearly $30 billion in Boeing aircraft. Turkey has been one of the fastest growing economies in the world and a big place for American companies to sell their goods. So they're right, and economic statecraft should be the approach. Exports could help us create jobs in the U.S. We are in a more globalized economy, but both Kerry and Clinton have sort of struggled in terms of implementing it.
Colin Powell told you of a letter from George Kennan that he received when he became Secretary of State in 2001. What did Kennan say?
He was worried that too many secretaries of state were traveling too much, and he said they should spend more time in Washington sort of advising the president, and that by traveling so much, the secretaries of state were actually undermining the authority of ambassadors in these different countries.
Well, that advice was not taken by Hillary Clinton, and it hasn't been taken by John Kerry.
Yes, or Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice has the record in terms of miles traveled. Hillary Clinton has the record in terms of countries visited, and at his current pace, John Kerry will beat both of them. Again, longtime experts say this is not the idea. It shouldn't be a competition.
Well, the last two secretaries of state had political careers. The previous ones were political, but they not in the same way. I don't remember any of them ever running for office. Has the position changed?
It has changed. I think it's a bigger and more challenging position with more people around the world and more dangerous situations for them to deal with. George Shultz is also very popular. He came out of sort of corporate America and had great management skills. Condoleezza Rice, Madeleine Albright were known as academics. Frankly, their management skills were criticized. And Kerry said his goal was to be like Shultz, which combined sort of good management with great diplomacy. And the key thing, though, for every Secretary of State is their relationship with the president and having the president's trust.
We have a link to David Rhodes' article in The Atlantic on our show page, the article How John Kerry Could End Up Outdoing Hillary Clinton. It's in the December issue of The Atlantic. How do people access the Reuters version?
Just go to Reuters. I guess you could Google Reuters and Kerry, and it would probably come up, or Reuters and Rhode, R-O-H-D-E. You're kind to mention it.
David, thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you for having me.